Well, looks like we have another movie with what AJ says has a very, very loyal following.
Yeah, I told you last week that this movie has a big loyal following.
How many people have seen this movie?
According to Letterboxd, 921.
We are the Punks! United we stand. The Punks! Divided we fall. We are the Punks! Rejected the underdog. We are the Punks!
Wow. That's what we consider a cult following, not a large, loyal following.
You know, I'm going to say I'm very surprised at that number, and I'm not exactly sure why it's that low. I know that I can get in my own head about these movies that I love from when I was a kid. I think that more than 921 people have seen this movie. I want to go out on a limb.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it Barbie 1 million, 2 million watch levels? No, probably not. But Letterboxd, it's not infallible. People aren't like me and go through and scour the entirety of Letterboxd and find every single movie they've ever seen. So I can see why this one kind of fell through the cracks. It's also not an instant rewatchable the way that, like, or easily accessible as a lot of DCOMs are or a lot of other childhood movies are. So I get why, even if you have seen this one, you haven't gone out of your way to review it. But I still think the 921 on Letterboxd is, you know, a little low. 922 once you log this one, Trevor.
Yeah, once I log it, it'll be a little higher. I mean, obviously you can't take Letterboxd that number and say that's how many people have seen it.
Right.
It's going to be bigger. However, you can compare it by saying, okay, well, 921, 22, however, now, has seen that movie. Mm-hmm. But when we look at something like, let's just say Elemental is the movie that I'm clicking on right now.
Mm-hmm.
600,000 people have seen that one.
Right.
And then something probably a little bit more popular, like Barbie, 3.3 million.
Yeah,
but so, more than 3.3 million people have seen Barbie, but it's just how many people have seen Barbie, have Letterboxd, and have logged it.
So exactly.
You compare them. I would just say, though, that most people that have Letterboxd probably don't watch Punks, because while it is cool to like schlocky movies, I don't think a lot of those people, we are paving the way for people to reclaim family films, kids and family movies. We are paving the way to show that there are quality films in this genre, the family or kids entertainment, family and kids genre. There's not a lot, but there are some. This is not one of them, though.
You know, I'm just hoping that after this episode, I check Letterboxd in like a week or two from now, I see that this is over the 1,000 hump. That would make me happy. I'm hoping that there are some people who see this episode, you know, even if it's like 4 of you, seen this episode and they're like, oh my god, I entirely forgot about this movie. But I don't remember where I saw it. I don't remember how I saw it. But I saw it.
But AJ, that would require you to recommend this movie at the end of the show.
Which I'm in my head about, Trevor. You know this about me. You know how much I struggle with objectivity versus subjectivity. And let's be honest, there's a lot of things in this movie that I'm going to be hyping up and really loving. But I'm not blind to the fact that there are a lot of things in this movie that are not good and would definitely hold me back if I did give a recommendation from doing so. But with all of that said, let's start it off by saying happy 25th anniversary to Punks. A little belated again. We had a couple belated 25th anniversaries this season coming out, this one included, because of, you know, travel and doing the Lord of the Rings in February. But this movie did come out in January of 1999, January 12th, 99. It was filmed back in 1997, but wasn't released until January of 99. And it was directed by an old kids movies classic, a staple, Sean McNamara. Did you spot any similarities with this in a movie like, say, Three Ninjas, High Noon, and Mega Mountain?
Yeah, I definitely did. But yeah. I would say, I think more so with other films, not necessarily Three Ninjas, High Noon, and Mega Mountain. It's tough, because this movie, the first thing I noticed was, wow, what a crazy cast. This is like a real cast. Like an insanely well-known and crazy cast.
Can we drop some names first?
Yeah, absolutely.
Henry Winkler, Academy Award nominee Kathy Moriarty, Randy Quaid, Jessica Alba is in this movie.
When I saw like the poster for Punks, you see it's all five kids on the cover, And then there are three adult actor names on there that were the draw for the film. Mm-hmm. Henry Winkler, I think at this point, was probably most – the draw was likely for Happy Days.
Yeah, Happy Days. He was the Fonz.
Yes. Well, I mean, at that point, that's what he was – I don't know if that was what he was most known for, but – or at this time, but I mean, I don't know. It's hard to separate him. Did he struggle to really find work between then and right after the show and a little bit after?
I'm not a Fonzie expert, so I can't say. But I mean, Kathy Moriarty, this is
right.
Not her first Sean McNamara movie. Actually, it might have been. I'm not sure if Cast Meets Wendy came out before or after this.
It came out before.
Okay. Then it's not her first.
Well, both films came out before. Both Casper movies came out before.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And yeah, Casper Meets Wendy was 98. But this guy, I mean, we've talked about him. He's directed tons of kids' films from our generation and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Casper Meets Wendy, of course, Three Ninjas of High Noon and Omega Mountain, both of which we have done. The Even Stevens movie, which we have not mm-hmm. done. A little bit later, he did the Bratz movie,
yep.
which was, I didn't see, obviously, but I'm sure some people did. And then he did the Suite Life movie, which is, I think, probably still kind of our generation that might have watched it, but maybe a little bit younger. Older.
Just like a couple. Put it this way. I was really big into the Suite Life of Zack and Cody. I watched a season or two, maybe even three of mm-hmm. On Deck, and I got about 10 minutes into the Suite Life movie and just turned it off because I was so disconnected from it at that point.
And he's done stuff like this even since. He's done one of the Cats and Dogs movie. The third film, if you've ever seen that. So, I mean, he mm-hmm. just knows his stuff about how to target kids, making it on a fairly, fairly low budget, working with what you've got, and making it good for kids. I don't think these films really go beyond that. They are not really for anyone else.
No, that's totally fair. But I feel like you might have... No, I don't think you did undersell him. Maybe I want to hype him up a little bit more. He's good at what he does for his target audience. It's just, you know, these three movies, High Noon at Mega Mountain, Punks, and Casper Meets Wendy, I've probably watched each of them 10 to 20 times in my childhood, bare minimum. Like, those were enormous, enormous movies in my childhood. Like, I cannot overstate how happy I was when my mom came home with the VHS of Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain, or how thrilled I was when my dad came home from work one day out of the blue with a VHS of Casper Meets Wendy. Like, those weren't just like whatever. Like, one day my dad came home with like Agent Cody Banks, and I was excited about that, but I was so much more excited when he walked through the doors with Casper Meets Wendy. Like, this guy made movies that like were enormous for me as a child. Like, I cannot overstate how much this guy had an impact on my viewing habits as a child, and may have even shaped my opinions and tastes as an adult.
Definitely has shaped your opinions as an adult. I would say that the only really movie that I saw as a kid was Casper Meets Wendy, but I've seen some of his TV work. The Even Stevens movie I did see too, but yeah. Like, I've seen his TV work and Even Stevens, That's So Raven. So I don't know exactly what stuff he worked on, like exactly what he did on a lot of those things, but I've seen them. He's credited as executive producer and director on that, so I don't know which mm-hmm. episodes he did or if he was more kind of show running at that point.
Yeah, well, talk me through, you said you've never heard of this movie until I told you about it.
Yes, yeah, surprisingly, because also it's not just the adults that are in here. The kids that are in Punks are also like Jessica Alba, Patrick Renna. That's just mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah, the kid from Johnny Tsunami was in this movie.
Sure. So yeah, it's just interesting. I am surprised I never really saw it. And after watching this, I think that I understand why you liked this specifically at the time that you saw this. And I can understand why a lot of other kids, particularly boys, I would say, mm-hmm. though, of course, they have the token female in this group. So I'm going to talk a lot of it about the cliches that they have to use in these types of movies. These kids' movies where they have a group of kids do something kind of cool. I'm trying to think of a perfect other example. And like, I feel like we just watched one recently that was like this.
Baby Geniuses?
But, no, not Baby Geniuses. No. Like kids doing something. Like 12-year-olds. You know what? No. Brink. Something like Brink.
Yeah.
where you have a group come together, they do something cool, and you have like the token girl character. I want to applaud this movie for the diversity at this time, especially. It's really cool. However, there's a lot of issues with how a lot of the characters are represented and presented, which we'll get into. But I get the draw of this movie as a kid. They are doing really, really cool things. It is a fantasy for kids. Kids get to live this fantasy of coming together with your friends, overcoming the bullies, and doing something incredible, like hijacking a science, evil science corporation, and stealing a suit that makes you superhuman. It's really cool as a kid. But as an adult, you see a lot more of the production behind it, and you understand how it's not the greatest presentation.
Yeah. I mean, it was both a joy and a disappointment to revisit this movie. But you said something that really it boils down to, and it just boils down to four words, Trevor.
Yes.
Kids doing cool things.
Exactly.
That's it. And to your point about the cohort of guys and the token girl, like, look at his other movie, Three Ninjas High Noon and Mega Mountain. You've got the three ninjas, and then Amanda's there, and she's got a couple quirks that she can offer personality-wise, but she's also got the gadgets, and like her dad's the guy who works on movies. That's another example of, I think, what you were hitting on there. I don't know what else I can say about this movie, about how much I love it, but yeah, I don't know where I stumbled upon it. I'm not sure if it was a TV movie for me or a Blockbuster movie for me, but I'm going to lean Blockbuster because I remember a lot of like early day message boards and like forums were talking about how there was a debate about whether or not this was technically a DCOM. Now, I have not seen anything production note wise on the movie itself, the poster, on Wikipedia, Disney's own records, yada, yada, that specifies that this is a DCOM. I'm pretty sure that this was a direct-to-video movie that may have either premiered or had multiple airings over a short period of time that made people believe it was a DCOM, similar to a Wonderful World of Disney movie like Tower of Terror, Life Size, My Date with the President's Daughter. So that's just simply not the case.
This was straight to DVD or straight to TV? Did not have a theatrical release is what you're saying, right?
I'm pretty sure it was straight to video. And that's why it makes me think it was a Blockbuster movie for me, because this lines right up with me walking through the kids aisle and looking over a movie like The Shrunken City and then getting to a movie like this. And I'm like, oh, Punks, that's a cool name. Punks, like, that's edgy. Like, I'm six. That's cool to see the word Punks. Oh, there's like guys in sunglasses and they're holding weapons and there's lights. Jeez. I want to watch this movie. And I loved it.
They have an adult in a chair and they're like tied up. Whoa.
That kind of shit hooks you, you know?
As a kid, yes.
I'm talking about walking through the Blockbuster kids and family aisle when I'm six. Yes. But no, this is kind of a member berry too, but this movie was so big in my life, and it was in the transitional period when they stopped having VHS's work and Blockbuster was phasing out, and they did release this movie on DVD. So this was in the time before I had a credit card or a debit card or anything like that, but I had a little bit of like birthday money and things like that. So I was probably 12, 13. So I would go use my cash whenever my family went to Stop and Shop. I would buy an Amazon gift card, and I would use those Amazon gift cards to buy my own movies off of Amazon. So I did this for this movie as soon as it came out on DVD. So it was probably like 2005, I would say. So I was probably 11 when I bought this on DVD. But by that point, I had rented this video so many times that it was a childhood staple for me.
I feel like at 11, I would have grown out of this movie. I think this movie is for like 8 and under.
Most people would. But we talked about this a lot on the show. Even as a child, even as like a 12-year-old, when I was 12, I was nostalgic for the times that I was like 5. I really clung on to...
You wanted to be in kindergarten. See, that's just so bizarre. At 12, most people would want to be teenagers, like older.
Yeah, and I did that too. Like, I remember there were movies that I would watch, like From Dusk Till Dawn and Bully and like these really hard R movies. Like, when I wasn't allowed to, I watched Pulp Fiction. I watched Silence of the Lambs. Like, I would watch these hard R movies before I was 17. Like, I remember begging my mother at age 13 to let me get Silence of the Lambs on DVD when I was 13. But I was also a very nostalgic person, and I loved revisiting media from the simpler times of my life. Now, I'm not saying I would go and watch, like, fucking Blue's Clues or shit like that, but if it was, like, if it was competent enough
like
storytelling.
Nick Jr. episodes,
right. I
TV
wouldn't go
episodes.
Back and watch like stuff like that, but I would still really hold, you know, in a special place, a movie like The Shrunken City or like Warriors of Virtue or Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain or this or Casper Meets Wendy. Like, I would watch a lot of this stuff through like middle school. And then around that time that you were talking about, that's when I would start to really, like, the flip switched. But I always still had a fondness for a movie like this, and I try to make time for it at least once every couple of years. And, you know, I haven't rewatched this movie in probably 5+ years because I knew I was going to do it one day for the podcast. And I was thinking about doing it last year, the year before. But with the anniversary this year, I figured 25th anniversary, what better time to save it and do it.
For context, before I watched this movie, AJ said, this is a tier below Shrunken City. And to me, I initially heard that as this is slightly worse than Shrunken City. I think The Shrunken City was like one of the lowest quality of movies that we could watch because it felt like they made it in someone's backyard or only places that they had access to. The props looked really bad. The acting was really bad. The production was really bad. It just really didn't feel like a complete movie. It really didn't feel like the effort was there, the story was there, like for the concept that they had. Obviously, you can make movies with all of that, but they were trying to do this high fantasy sci-fi concept movie, which this movie was too, but the talent was there. They had known actors at the time, adult actors. Jessica Alba wasn't really known at this time, but The Sandlot was before this. So we had he was known at this
Patrick
time.
Patrick Renna, yeah.
Yeah, he was known at this time. And I think he had a couple of other movies, too, after that. It was Big Green before this?
Probably after, because I looked at the age. Unless I misread it, I think he was 18 years old when he made this movie. Because
that's crazy.
He was born in 79, and it was filmed in 97. So he was 17,
that's
18
crazy.
Years old. Yeah,
the
ages on
it.
These kids, because I forget what the character's name, but Johnny Tsunami was 12 when he filmed this.
Okay.
I think, Jessica Alba was like 16. The kid who played Drew was like 14. So there was a big range of ages here. They weren't all, like at one point it's Drew's like 13th birthday, but Miles says at one point he's 14, so they're clearly in like another grade, because if they were in the same grade, Drew would have been turning 14, 13 turning 4, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't go from 12 to 13 to 14 in the same age range. Regardless.
I was a little lost on your comment there, because this is, I think, definitely a tier above or a couple tiers above. I think Shrunken City is very, very bottom tier of what we generally watch. Not like you say Daddy Daycare is probably one of the worst ones, but that felt like a movie, at least. Like, they had actors, it had a director, it had setups, and it felt like the way they filmed it was like a movie. The way they filmed this and the way they filmed The Shrunken City, like straight to DVD, TV movies, there's a lot of info dumping and a lot of shortcuts to get this out. Though this was released 2 years after, which is strange.
I see what you're saying. I'll keep the Shrunken City commentary short because I know a lot of people haven't seen that one, but they should if they like old kids movies.
No, they should not.
So The comment I would say on The Shrunken City when it came to the tier thing is that The Shrunken City was one of my personal favorite childhood movies. That's what I meant by the tier thing. Quality-wise, I actually do think the same thing. Like, I would recommend The Shrunken City over Punks.
But you would tell an adult who has never seen The Shrunken City to watch it as something to watch.
I would be more likely to recommend the movie The Shrunken City than the movie Punks at this point.
But would you recommend The Shrunken City to an adult who...
No.
Okay.
Unless they like old kids movies like this.
But I like old kids movies, and I was endlessly bored by The Shrunken City.
Yeah, but you're in the minority, man.
Am I in the minority? How many people have seen The Shrunken City?
No one, and that's my point. But that's all I meant by that initial comment was The Shrunken City was like in close to my like top 5 maybe childhood movies of all time. This is like in the like 10 to 25 range.
It has more 2-star ratings than 3, 1.5, 4, 4.5, and 5 combined.
The Shrunken City or
yes.
Punks? Okay, let's move on from The Shrunken City because no one knows what the fuck we're talking about.
I'm just shitting on it.
to date, it is our least downloaded episode, and I knew it would be going into that, but that, again, it was very important to me as a kid.
So I'm trying to promote that episode.
Please do. It's actually a pretty good episode, and it's a good movie, but let's...
No, it's not. You can't say it's a good movie after you just said no.
It's a good movie for who it is. It's a good movie for its target demographic.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else you want to talk about, or should we jump into, for its 25th anniversary, Punks?
Let's just jump in.
Let's do it. Here it is, for its 25th anniversary, Punks.
Fitting in can be hard when you're not part of the in crowd.
What are you going to do about it, huh?
Yeah, that's good.
We'll never beat those guys.
Maybe we could, if we started a club or something. Strength in numbers, united we stand, that sort of thing.
What do we call it?
Punks!
Their first mission, to stop the evil Mr. Crow.
What does your dad do here?
Save Drew's father.
Enjoy your peace of mind.
And seize the ultimate invention. For the punks, action and adventure are all in a day's work. Featuring the superstar power of Randy Quaid from Kingpin, Independence Day, and National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation. Kathy Moriarty from Casper and the Mambo Kings. Patrick Renna from The Big Green.
Dangerous.
And Henry Winkler from Happy Days and Scream. Heads up, evildoers. Now you're dealing with the punks.
We are the punks!
Come to Papa Ronnie.
So while I understand why you liked this as a kid, it's pretty easy to see why you liked this as a kid. There are kids doing cool things. There are kids teaming up. Basically, they are bullied by, I don't know, the general bullies. The kid, they kind of feel dejected. This Drew character, his dad's not there, and he's trying to find a little family of his own and friends that he can find that have his back. And you have evil mastermind, tech, generic guy. It's just a very easy setup to have kids under the age of 3 understand and enjoy. But I want to start of what you liked from this movie today.
Sure. So I did have a lot, I'm not going to lie. And it comes down to what I was talking about with kids doing cool things. You know, they're dabbling in the technology. They're smart. They're resourceful. They're getting the one up. And so just the general concept and having the movie not even take me back to a place where I watched this movie a lot, but just at a time where, you know, the thought of that was cool. The thought of outsmarting the adults with technology in the 90s, like when this movie came out, techno, like internet, like hacking computers, that was just big. Like, and even when I was 6-7 years old, I was aware that that was a thing that people were talking about, and I was told that was cool, and so I thought it was cool. But there's a few scenes that I do want to call out here, and obviously some generals, but let's start with what I think is the most fun scene in the entire movie, and that is the golf course scene.
Over here. Leave the king alone.
You want the unit?
Come and get it.
This is the heart of the movie. This is the epitome of kids doing cool things. There's the song playing. I fucking love that song. To do another throwback, you told me to email some composers and say, hey, I love your music. Where can I buy it? And they'll just send it to you for free. And they did. And John Coda, who did the music for Three Ninjas Hiding in Mega Mountain, also sent me the We Are the Punk song. And so that is on my iTunes library and playlist right now. I fucking love this song. I love his music in this scene. I love the fake jumping into the pool. I love the golf clap thing. I love every single thing about, like, the kids outrunning, outsmarting, even the point where the taser is thrown in and just passively electrocutes everybody and doesn't kill them. Anyways, this scene is so cool and so fucking fun when you're an 8-year-old boy. I fucking love it.
I just don't find the repetitive action song very interesting to me. I get why it's fun and exciting as a kid, because you want to keep their attention. You want to have them excited. But to me, I'm not as thrilled in this scene. I think this was the scene where I said, oh, wow, I'm bored.
That hurts my soul.
But again, as a kid, I would really enjoy this scene. But now I'm like, oh, man, I'm so bored. Like, I just was constantly thinking out loud, saying, what? Why are they here? Why are they at a mini golf course? It's just to have a cool scene here. There's no real reason why it's here. These adults would not be at this mini golf course. Clearly not in Seattle. It's clearly filmed at the Sherman Oaks golf course or the same mini golf course where they filmed Karate Kid. It's one of those two. I couldn't figure out which one it was.
You know, it's funny. I thought I saw some California license plates
in the movie. This was not filmed in Seattle.
There isn't a space needle in California in that opening shot, opening establishment shot, yes, Trevor.
The second unit filmed in Seattle, but the first unit filmed in L.A. in Burbank.
No, I knew what we were in for the second we went from a transitional shot of the space needle in the skyline of Seattle to a school where the lockers are outside. And I'm like, those do not exist.
That was filmed at Pasadena.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna make kids go outside during the winter to get their books in Seattle? Really?
Side note, that's something that I didn't realize kids did in California, is have like hallways outside to go from class to class. Our high school was entirely inside on the East Coast. Like, you don't go outside unless you have, well, you want to take a break, like go out for lunch, or you wanted to go to gym, physical education, health, whatever you want to call it.
I went to Catholic school, so we were not allowed to leave the building.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, no, that's why Saved by the Bell is bullshit. You can tell because their lockers are inside.
That's funny.
Well, it does make me sad that you didn't like this scene because, yes, I'm coming into this with rose-colored glasses, but this was always the scene as a child I looked forward to the most. This, again, the music, the song, the pranks, the action. It was fun. This was the epitome of the kids doing cool things. I also really like the moment afterwards where Kathy Moriarty picks them up and she's driving them home and they're all on the lookout to see if they're being followed. And she says, oops, there's one. And they all like drop down and hide, and she's just laughing at him like, oh, you crazy kids. That got me to laugh.
I think I wanted something more interesting than a chase sequence at a mini golf course, but I think I just have higher standards now.
Nah, yeah, probably. Okay, I'm going to throw another one by you that took me by surprise, and just this one actually stood out as I actually really love this. It's the carjacking scene.
What do you think you're doing?
Uh-oh, hysterical moment, 3 o'clock.
Hey, you little peach fuzz heaven, beady-eyed little punks, get out of that car!
You know what? We're not running nose. Does that look running nose to you?
Ha! Ha! Yeah, good comeback, Lanny.
Okay.
Oh, she
looks
mad, you guys. Come on. This isn't a good idea. Let's go. Let's go. Come on.
I am gonna go get Bruno.
Come on, let's go, Sam.
Guys, ow. I think she's gonna get Bruno.
Jump, hell goats!
It starts with this lady hysterically yelling at these kids, making a huge scene, and then she gets into an argument with Lanny, and she's like, you little snot-nosed kids, and Lanny sticks his nose against the window. He's like, you see any snot dripping from there? I don't think so. And I don't know. I was genuinely laughing and enjoying myself during the scene, and I'm going to go out on a limb here. I thought you would have liked this scene.
I guess I didn't understand why they were doing this. Why were they stealing this car?
So Jessica Alba's character works at a garage that also works with repossessions. And so if you see, like, she drove it over to a guy's lot that says, like, Mike's Repo Lot or something like that. So somehow the car was broke a law, scammed, not paid for, whatever. So she went to repossess it and broke into it to show off her skills. And then they dropped it off at another guy's place.
You're not allowed to do that, though. You have to have a tow truck to repossess a car.
So? In punks you are.
Just to show when they're like, none of us have records. So you just saw someone that is not legally allowed to have a license break into a car, which you're not allowed to do. Like, do this. This is highly illegal on multiple levels. And they got caught doing that.
Trevor, I got four words for you. Do you know what those? Do you know what the four words I have for you are?
No.
Well, it's actually two sets of four words. One of them is kids doing cool things. The other one is willing suspension of disbelief.
No. Willing. This movie far lost me. I mean, I guess you could say that this movie has no suspension of, like, you just have to suspend all belief that anything in this movie that could happen will just, yeah, it happens. And I think that's where I draw the line, is I need some rules. Like, you need to give me some rules to follow. Otherwise, there's no stakes. No, this is real. Because if you don't have rules in a movie, if I don't know what is possible and what's impossible and what's legal and what's not legal, then there's no stakes. Because then I'm saying, well, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do this? They could have done any number of things to get out of the situation. And there's some scenes that really threw me off by how forced they were. But I'll save those because we're trying to be positive here. I'll say something positive.
Okay, please.
As silly as it was, I kind of liked the scene where they walked into the bar wearing, like, the most ridiculous disguises. They made the joke where they put on the sunglasses, they went to the golf course, and then that annoying kid was like, oh, hey, guys. And they're like, oh, the disguises didn't work. And I said, well, those were supposed to be disguises. So then when they go to the bar and they look like the little rascals, yep. I kind of chuckled.
I figured,
and it's stupid, but it was funny.
I figured you would either love or hate this. I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit more on this entire thing is kind of ridiculous. I very much liked the scene where they took a sip of alcohol and, like, in unison spit it out. That made me chuckle. But everything else, I keep forgetting his name, Drew sitting down with Henry Winkler's character, with Crow, and, like, threatening him. I'm like, dude, this kid's literally 13 years old. I just would have, like, ripped off his disguise, his, like, his beard and his glasses, and been like, I'm gonna, like, call the cops on you for stealing from me. I don't know. That whole thing threw me off. And then, of course, it was another situation where something escalates and they have a big fight afterwards. And that, to me, was the movie kind of feeling its length in that scene. One of the examples, yeah. I'll say. There were more than one, but that was one of them.
I'll talk about later what I did not enjoy from that scene.
I only have one other big scene. The rest is generals and quotes. What did you think about the demonstration scene where Crow is wearing the suit and his, like, henchwoman is demonstrating for him, and then they have him do all the dances and they override him from Drew's garage?
You liked this scene?
It made me smile.
But let me ask you this. Why does this augmenter have another person need to control it, which it doesn't always need to control it, but when they're doing the demonstration, it's so easy to fake that, because the person is like, watch, she will do movements and I will mimic those movements. She is controlling me. Yeah. If I was an investor, I would walk the fuck out immediately as soon as I see this. As soon as he says that, I'm like, I'm out. What the hell is this? What is this ridiculous show? What is this circus? This is a circus.
Yeah, because they could have choreographed it, as evidenced by the fact that they did it in this movie.
Yes. And they also could have, I don't know, just like, I mean, that. And also the fact that I don't understand why you need that. The augmenter was originally supposed to just increase strength. So why would you have, well, I mean, really, it was supposed to help someone who might not have working limbs to, like, walk and stuff and do other things, increase, like, help for health, really. So why do you need someone else to control it? That sounds not really ideal.
For the plot, Trevor. No, but
again, yeah,
in all seriousness, I could definitely see a world or a reason for why that remote control option exists. I don't know if it was explained the best narratively. It's a fair call out. Independent of the reason for why that ability to control exists, I just thought that it was a funny scene. It was goofy. It was silly. I laughed.
I'm surprised you laughed at this, because I feel like other similar scenes you don't laugh at.
Yeah. Fair call out. Some of the parts I was like, okay, this is going on a little bit too long. But when it first started, when he splashed the water in his face and then immediately starts dancing like Michael Jackson, I was like, okay, this is pretty funny. But did it go on for 30 seconds too long? It did.
Yeah. I mean, I like Henry Winkler. I think he's a really good actor. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a whole lot to work with because his character doesn't have a whole lot of depth in this movie. And I think he's better when his characters have depth. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen Barry.
If you've ever seen Holes, where he plays the father of a falsely convicted child felon. I have not seen Barry, but I've heard great things. Another thing about this scene is you can very clearly call out that it's a stunt double when he turns around because his hair changes from straight in the back to curly in the back.
Yeah.
Did you like the character of Lanny?
He was fine.
I sneakily think he's the best character in the movie. Like, Miles is the nerd, and Drew's, yes, like, the sad protagonist.
The sad protagonist.
Yeah. And Samantha is, like, the edgy girl. And, like, I keep forgetting the other guy's name, but he's, like, the con. Whereas Larry's, like, the troublemaker, rather. Yeah.
He's, like, the big, I don't know.
No, he's a con man. He's a con man. Like, he tries to...
Oh, he is a
like,
con man. Yeah,
yeah, he's, like, hustling the money out of it. Yeah. Yeah.
He hustles with the baseball cards and something.
Yeah, like that's what I didn't mean, like, a legal con. I meant, like, a con man. Thank you for correcting me. But Larry is, like, he's the health nut for some reason, and he's eating rice cakes and getting called out for their being styrofoam.
Oh, I like that. All the that nutrition. Was funny.
He has all the nutrition information to back it up.
I thought you should know because you were totally wrong.
He's like shoving peanut butter in his mouth and sounding the alarm. He's very witty. I think this also comes from Patrick Renna. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a lot of improv there as well. But, you know,
I do like Patrick Renna.
Yeah, like the scene where he has the stun gun and he's like falling over and he's like, I'll be down here. And he falls down. I thought that was really funny. I thought him in the final scene, he was incredibly witty when he like gets these two guards and like shoves their faces together. It's like, have you two met before? And he's like grabbing the arm of the lady who's trying to escape. He's like, hey, no, you're not going anywhere. We need a cop over here. I don't know. Just everything about Patrick Renna's character, the writing, the acting, I'm assuming the improv, the wittiness. Right. I have so many good things to say about everything about that.
I like Patrick Renna a lot. I actually think most of the kid actors are pretty good. They're not great, but they do a good enough job. And I like the fact that it is a fairly diverse cast. I mean, you have people of all different sorts of backgrounds, which is cool. That's cool, especially at this time. And I think that Patrick Renna is probably the best actor out of all of them, maybe at this time. I think probably the most experience, and he kind of knows what his role is here. He knows that he's not the protagonist, but he knows how to carry a scene. And I think he does a great job carrying a scene.
The moments when they're like breaking in the first time, and mm-hmm. he has to let them know that there's company, and he's trying to press the button and alert them, but he has a mouthful of peanut butter, and he's just shouting company and like trying to lick out the peanut butter so he can clear mm-hmm. his throat enough to say company.
Hey, we got company. We have company. Company.
Oh man, he's great. So yeah, I wanted to throw that out there because I figured you would like him. But what else were you gonna say?
So there's a scene I did want to talk about. There's a positive and a negative in it. I'll just start with the negative because it leads into the positive, and then we don't have to talk about it later. The scene where Henry Winkler is talking on that receiver and talks about the FBI agent, and all of the kids are like, fuck this, I'm out. Mm-hmm. They are out so quickly after just talking about being together, and it's so quick and forced. They're like, this. It's clear they're doing the scene where they're supposed to say, oh, we're out, and you're being selfish. This is the scene where that's supposed to happen in a script. In a story, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, here we go. This is the scene where this happens, but it's just so forced. It's so ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. However, right when Drew starts to talk about how like he needs to do this for his dad, I thought that was a really great display of acting there. Like when he actually like breaks into tears and starts talking, I'm not even joking. I was impressed. I'm like, dang, that's pretty good. It's unfortunate that the scene didn't win me over in the end because of how like forced it felt. But I'm like, dang, you know, this really could have had me here. And I really want to give him props. And like, that was really impressive because I thought he really did a great job in that scene. And I think, I mean, he really hasn't done much, but that scene is promise of what a career he could have had of like starring in these kinds of movies if he grew older.
You're a kinder man than I am, Trevor. But that,
oh,
that
you don't think
scene,
so?
That scene is firmly the scene and the acting are firmly in my okay. things I didn't really like about this, because you know what? I'll call it out every time it happens. I'll call it out in the 2017 It movie when they just split up for no reason. I'll call it out here. Even worse so here, when they were just, you're right, they were just like on the same page, then all of a sudden all four of them are out, and it's like, yes, this is the stereotypical, the gang gets back together or breaks up, and then they get back together without any warning. They're like, we were just kidding, you know, 24 hours later, you were totally right, we acted too, that was not set up, and it was entirely unnecessary. Like, I much rather would have had a scene of them like sending Drew and working with him, so we didn't need the breakdown and then get back together. Like, they could have had Drew go to Houlihan's place without the breakup happening and them going back in. But regardless, no, the ugly crying, it was a little bit of no. It wasn't, you know, the acting levels of Ty Sheridan when he confronts Mudd on the island. You know, every single thing you told me was a lie. You never cared about her, and you never cared about us.
Yeah, I get that. It's not the same, but also that was a different movie, different budget, different access. This is a different type of movie.
Oh, I know.
This is not a movie that's going to win any awards. This is not a movie that is character driven. This is a movie that is action driven. And I think that's probably why I'm a little harsh on it, is because if the action isn't interesting, you're not really going to get pulled in. And a lot of these movies, the action is only interesting is if you are like a kid, you know, mm-hmm. or nostalgic like you are. And I'm just not nostalgic wrong. For this kind of action.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, sometimes I am, but I want it to be good. You know? Like, okay. You talk about a movie of kids doing cool things. I think teenagers doing cool things are good for kids and teenagers and older. Like Ferris Bueller. Mm-hmm. That's a movie where kids do cool things. They skip school, which is probably not great, but they also do some cool things, right? The scene where Ferris runs home is very fun and exciting.
Yeah.
That's a scene that's like iconic for how fun and exciting it is, where a lot of the chase sequences in here feel just very par for the course.
That's Allison's favorite movie, by the way.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah, it's a tie between that and the original Top Gun.
Interesting, the original Top Gun. Okay.
Yeah. So she's seen Maverick. She likes Maverick. She fell asleep the first time she watched it. But
Maverick's a better movie than the original Top Gun. I'll say that much.
I agree. And she's going to be mad at me for saying this on the podcast, but it okay. totally is. And just to be clear, the only reason she fell asleep during Top Gun Maverick is because she was dragged to an 11 o'clock showing after working a day shift at the hospital for 12 hours. So, but that's what she
You want to be awake. You want to be awake for that. It's, I don't
But she watched
her.
It again I later assumed. And she loved it.
I assumed it was something like that, for sure. So, what else do you want to talk about here? Because I have some lines I like that I actually enjoyed.
So, a few lines and then quips. So, I guess one quip, if that's okay to like jump into this.
Sure.
Yeah, it's the scene where they're at Houlihan's and he opens the bathroom door and she's like going somewhere and she's about to walk in and he slams the door in her face and she just lets out an ow. I didn't like that scene that much, but I liked that moment in the scene.
That scene was really weird. Because this just totally wouldn't happen like this.
Yeah. I liked in general the banter of Miles and Samantha after the initial heist. I really thought that Jessica Alba and the actor who plays Miles, who is Kenneth A. Brown, I thought that they worked off really well together. Worked really well off of each other.
Sure.
How about you?
There's a few lines that I liked. I liked when it was Patrick Renna's character was like, "Come on, Ronnie, we can work this out, right?" and get shoved to the ground. That was great. I did like that.
One thing I also liked about this movie is that they the bullies, which you were referring to, it's like it's established that these kids are bullied, but it's not like the bullying of these kids is like a crucial part of this movie where they keep getting bullied every 12 minutes. You know what I'm talking about? There's not like a bully confrontation every time. These aren't Stephen King level bullies.
Well, no, because they were Stephen King level bullies. Let's not joke about, let's not lie.
Oh my gosh. They stole a comic book and some money from a commission for protection.
Dude, these, ki- I'm not even saying like they're as bad as Stephen King level bullies, but I'm saying that they're just over the top. Oh, yes, we are bullies. What are you going to do about it, little man? throws you in the trash can. Just over the top and goofy. Okay. Yes, bullying. I think movies like this do a bad job of show what bullying actually looks like. So that when kids actually get bullied, they're like, this isn't bullying. They were just joking around.
Do you expect punks to
dabble
into the
saying,
ideas of microaggressions in the school system?
More so Stephen King stuff. All right. So I liked the line that I said.
Okay.
I liked, besides, he already thinks I'm a big wiener. A wiener is just a winner spelled wrong. As stupid as that was, it was a funny ass line.
I wrote that down in things I didn't like. Even though I didn't dislike it, I just needed to acknowledge it somehow, and I'm glad that you did it in some way, because that's like, if I think of lines from this movie without having rewatched this, that would be towards the top of that's from Punks, and I still have no idea what to make of that line, but I'm very glad it's in this movie, as ridiculous as it is.
Another line: this is starting to suck, Boku. Excuse my French. That's a great line. Did you understand that line, AJ?
I can say this in French, Spanish, and English, no?
Beaucoup is a French word.
Hmm. Yeah, that's why I was...
Okay.
I picked up on that. French Canadian.
Okay,
I have the ear for it. So,
okay,
would you explain,
okay, yeah.
Would you explain what
well,
that
no, it's just like, this is starting to suck, Beaucoup. Like, this is starting to suck a lot.
Oh, Beaucoup means a lot. Okay, yes.
Beaucoup means a lot, basically. So, I thought that was funny. It basically means that. If I misunderstand, all the French people come at me. And there's the line on the golf course I did like when they got the guy stuck in the windmill. They're like, golf clap, golf clap.
Yes, and I knew you. I hoped you'd like that.
That was a good line. That was a great line. Not even a good line. That was a great line. That was a great moment, too.
Hey, nice slice.
Yeah, well, it drifted a little left, but I'm happy with it.
Golf clap?
Golf clap.
Going to the golf scene, did you like when they fake jumped in and got the henchmen to like jump into the water?
I don't know. It's kind of fun. It's not that clever. I mean, it's the same type of stuff as... I wish that scene, they used the mini golf course a little bit more, you know? But it's a mini golf course. What are you going to do? I don't know.
Right.
It's like an amusement park. It doesn't surprise me that Sean McNamara also directed High Noon at Mega Mountain and did this kind of thing, because... High Noon at Mega Mountain has that amazing fight sequence during the demonstration, like the stunt demonstration. That's such an amazing sequence, fight sequence, and ninja sequence. I wish we saw a little bit more of that, because I think he was really fun at doing that and making it exciting for kids. And that's something that, like, if you enjoy kung fu or action, you can enjoy it. But this scene was missing a little bit of that, like comedy action, I think. You know, but it was relied too much on chase sequencing. When they have this augmenter suit, which could have been used in way better situations. But we're still on things we like. So there's maybe one more line I liked. I think they're talking about why things are the way they are or whatever. I forget who exactly said it, but they're like, well, we should do this, you know, as a team. Why don't we team up just like the X-Men? And then someone says, that way we can get beat up as a group. Do you know who says that line?
It must have been Miles, is my guess.
Oh, is Miles the computer nerd?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it might have been Miles, but it was funny.
The last thing I have here is just another shout out to Kathy Moriarty and the mother character in general. But the mom walking up and being like, hey, what are you guys up to today? And Drew's like, we're stealing top secret technology from corporate databases, mom. And she's like, all right, Pookums, have fun.
Pookums.
Pookums.
Is that
a word made up for
a pet name for moms and their kids who are mama's boys? I don't know what it is, but it was kind of a funny word, and I liked it. It's a word that was funny for this type of thing.
All right. And anything else here? Do you want to start talking about some negative things here?
Let's jump into the negative. Oh, as hard as this is.
I'm sure you got a lot to say, Trevor. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I think, like I said, this is just relied on so much nonsense and contrivance. there's a lot of info dumping. So with the first scene, we have the father and Henry Winkler's character. They're just saying, we designed this suit to do this, and now you want to do this.
Mr. Crow, we can't test the augmenter on a human subject until I finish the other test. It's too soon.
Seize the day, Mr. Rutley. There is no time like the present. Proceed.
But the augmenter is designed to help paralyzed people to walk. I designed it specifically to regenerate atrophied muscles with electrochemical biostatic stimulation. But there could be serious side effects. I mean, he could become psychotic. He could go into cardiac arrest.
Relax. He's a convict and he signed a waiver.
To do community service, not light up like a Christmas tree.
Nonsense.
I think another thing about the suit, it looks so bad. No, not like the design doesn't look bad. It's just a vest, but it could have been so much cooler.
Yeah.
Not only could it have looked cooler, it could have felt cooler because, I don't know. At that point, if you're going to put it in a backpack and use it there, why not just have like a watch, like fucking Clock Stoppers? Like just, right. There's so many cooler things you could do than have this vest that looks like an exoskeleton Iron Man suit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just what is this? Or make the vest even slimmer. And the stupid voice effect that they had to do, I just could not get behind the voice effect. It was totally unnecessary, bogus, weird. So that was something I really disliked there.
It threw me off as a kid, but it also really helped me understand as a kid that, like, oh, this is the augmentation. I think it worked well for some people and not for others. So, you know, towards the end when Lanny had it, I thought that was really funny when he's like, come to Papa, and you kind of hear the anger in his voice. But when Drew, like, I was like, guys, I'm on the freeway. Like, that really bugs me when they're just like, when the dad is like yelling and making weird noises. I thought that was kind of stupid. Yeah, so
yes,
I'm
agreed.
Firmly with you there. But going back to what you said earlier about Randy Quaid saying, we built it for this and you're doing this. First off, that first test scene I thought was insufferable. I watched that scene and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to just hate this movie. Because it's very early on and it made me very nervous. Now, I didn't hate it. I'll get to that in a minute. But I was very skeptical watching this because of the info dump, because I don't think Henry Winkler did a good job in that scene. I don't think that Randy Quaid did a good job in the entire movie. I think Randy
Quaid there.
Does a terrible job in this movie. And it's just it's sad to like start off on such a note, because the scene's important in the structure of the movie, because it's like you have to show what this is capable of. You have to show what, you know, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. And this could have been done so much better, but this was just an insufferable scene in every regard.
Yeah.
What else you got?
The scene where he's on the freeway was kind of cool, but just that whole, like all of the other stuff in there, it just, the execution wasn't there. I think having him on a bike in the freeway, that's a really cool idea. That's really fun. But it just didn't feel right. The tracking thing that they have, they used basically like it was a stub finder. The prop looked so goofy. It looked like a stub finder that you would use in your apartment or house to hang up paintings.
Yeah.
Like, this is a tracker. And then they used a Party City deputy pin to put on him. And, oh no, there's a tracker in here. Like, come on. You had to have a better budget than to make it look better than that. I talked about the demonstration. I talked about some of the acting. I think that it's so generic. Like, the whole plot and evil villain, so generic. The other thing is, they have the worst security ever. I actually want to talk a little bit about this company. The Crow Enterprise, is it Crow Tech? Crow Enterprise? Whatever the hell it is.
Crow Research I think it was production.
Crow Research, it's crap. It's crap abbreviation, which is kind of funny. I like that it's crap. And there's a sign in the back, it says crap.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, that crow that he pets, is that supposed to be a live crow?
You mean like a taxidermist one?
Yeah, it's a taxidermist one, but is it supposed to be alive? Because he like pets it at one point.
No, no. I think it's supposed to be a stuffed crow. Yeah.
Okay, he's just being weird and stuff. I think that this company, they have a server that can be accessed from the garage. It's easily hacked into by a 12-year-old. They can just hack it by like trying super password users and stuff. Just and then the fact that these 12-year-old kids who have never done a heist before in their life were able to break in, and the security guard does that. There's no cameras or anything. It's just a terrible thing. Plus, they want to sell this to the exoskeleton, whatever, the augmenter, to the open black market. Not the black market, the open black market.
That's,
and
that,
I want
that
to sit with you
for
a second.
Yeah, that line made me chuckle. How little does he know that we're going to sell it on the open black market? I did a double take. I was, what?
Unbelievable. Because isn't it just kind of silly? Okay, fine. That it's a line that you could just think of. Okay, whatever. That's fine. But that is one of the reasons why they're doing illegal things. They're trying to track down and kill these kids. The other is that they are trying to sell it to foreign, like, I don't know, other countries. Why don't they just sell it to the government? And then you can't just get arrested at the end. But just like thinking how stupid they are. This is stuff that as a kid you don't think of, but now I do.
To quote the pacifier, guess what? North Korea pays better.
I guess so. I guess that is the situation than the pacifier. That's what.
Are we ever going to do the Master of Disguise on this show?
We should.
Okay, because there's a bunch of black market jokes, and there's one, there's like, they do a flash to like a computer screen at the ending scene. It's like black market eBay.
That's ridiculous.
And I was like 9 years old. I was like, is that a real thing?
No. So yeah, I thought that was goofy and silly.
Yeah.
And a couple of other things I just want to run over. All the investors are watching. They're watching him, like Henry Winkler, like beat up this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just totally fine with it. Again, another like ridiculous thing that's happening. I know I said I liked the scene in the bar where they were in the silly disguises. But again, there's another scene, very problematic, where Patrick Renna, underage, at least the character in the movie, for laughs, kisses a woman in her 40s.
Yeah.
Stuff that would definitely not fly today.
No.
But just like The Sandlot, which I had an issue with, even though I know it's an iconic scene or whatever, this was just totally unnecessary. She's like flirting with him at the bar. I do like when she was flirting, like that's fine. That's innocent enough. It's like, when's your birthday? September 15th, 19. Ooh, a Virgo. That's funny. That's cute.
Yeah. What did you think about the sound in this movie?
Well, there is one scene in the beginning where they were play wrestling, and there was like slide whistle sounds, and it was just stupid.
So what really stuck out to me on this one, and more so in probably any movie since Interstellar, is the sound mixing in this movie is not good. Where there's just randomly a piece of musical score playing in the background, and it is so loud, and it drowns out everything the people are saying. And I think it was the scene of right before they were wrestling, or the scene when they were like downstairs in the kitchen. But I was so distracted by A, the song choice, and B, the volume of the song as they were talking. And it wasn't that much of an issue towards the later part of the movie, but in general, I thought the sound mixing in this movie was pretty bad.
Yeah, I didn't think too much. I didn't think too much on that, to be honest, but
it was bad enough for me to notice it.
Yeah, that, and you never notice that kind of stuff.
Right.
Or you never comment on it, rather.
Yeah. Thank you for thank you for making me sound a little bit more attentive. And then
no, I get that. That's fair.
And then the only last thing I had was Johnny, the character of Johnny, who's played by Brendan Baker, aka Johnny Tsunami. The scene where he's tied up and he's like, "Oh, Drew, oh, please help us." It's like they didn't even try, or unless he was intentionally trying to like play up to the whole, this is what the damsel in distress would say in like an old 50s movie. And if that was intentional, it didn't come off that way. It came off as bad.
No,
kid
it was
acting.
Really, it was really bad kid acting there. Agreed there. I wrote that exact thing down too. So don't worry. One more thing I'll say, I guess, is I want to just bring up how stereotyped. Okay, Johnny and Samantha? Amanda? Yeah. Samantha or Amanda?
Samantha.
Okay, Johnny and Samantha's character, just, we are introduced Samantha. There is, like, somewhat hip-hop music playing. She's in a mechanic shop. She's kind of a crop top on, bandana. They both have criminal records. They're cousins. It's just very stereotyped.
Is it particularly the race or?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Just like kind of Latina stereotyped, stereotyping there, which I mean, I know this happens in the 90s, but like I was watching this with Amanda and she was like, oh my. She was like calling out everything. And like, that's kind of, I'm like, oh, yep, you are right. It's all there. This there, this, yep, yep. Like checks this box, this box, this box. Yeah, it's not super PC there, or progressive rather. But the rest of it's like pretty cool how they have this diverse cast and everything. I think that scene was just, I kind of burst out laughing when they introduced her.
Yeah. Side note, I really like Jessica Alba's accent in this movie. You know, they didn't bring the Augmenta.
Oh my God.
I don't know what accent it was supposed to be, but I liked
I don't know what accent it was supposed to be. Seattle. So a couple other like really funny nitpicks I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. One of them, Patrick Renna's character says, tomorrow's Saturday, WWF Royal Rumble is happening. Royal Rumble happens on Sundays, just like all other pay-per-views for wrestling, I'm pretty sure. And I double-checked because I'm like, they happen now on Sundays. Did they in 99 and 96, 97? They did. They didn't do their research. Another one. The kid who has the baseball cards, he's trying to sell them. Hey, this is a super rare autographed card. Put a fucking sleeve, a protector on that card, a binder. You would not have loose cards in your pocket. They would be worth nothing. They would get damaged. Their corners would rip or bend, and that they would be essentially worth nothing. This kid knows nothing about collectible trading cards. Those are the two nitpicks I had. That was funny.
Completely random, but you know what scene I ended up watching after this movie because the con man stuff was top of mind?
Something from Better Call Saul?
Yeah, I actually paused this movie to watch the scene in Better Call Saul when they scammed that guy at the bar to pay for the really expensive tequila.
Oh, remember that was great.
Yeah.
Wait, which one? The one with
Jimmy,
the one with his
Jimmy
old friend?
And, or? No, Jimmy and not our precious Jimmy. Jimmy and Kim, like,
yeah,
go and they pretend like they've inherited a bunch of money. And
yes,
like,
yes,
yeah. I don't know. Now I kind of want to watch Better Call Saul again.
I know, dude. Same. I really want to rewatch all of it.
Anything else you got, yeah, or can we? You want to?
No,
you wanna
let's
wrap
move
this
on.
Up?
That, those are like funny nitpicks. I just wanted to call out because I think they were kind of funny enough to call out.
Yeah, that's funny. Best adult joke. I had Crow Research and Production being everywhere in the background of this movie, and I also called out the drinking of alcohol and then spitting it out instantly. I thought it was pretty funny.
Ah, it's cliche.
How about you?
At one point, they were going to name their team Spunk, which, do you know what Spunk means?
Maybe not in the Urban Dictionary sense.
In England?
No, I don't.
It's like semen.
Oh. Yikes.
I cracked up if they named their if this movie was named Spunk.
Yeah, I did not know that. And, you know, that's really strange that I did not know that, Trevor, because did you actually know that I studied abroad?
Oh, my God.
All right, this is a good movie for member berries, Trevor. What do you have for member
decently,
berries?
Yeah. I think comic books, and not just like, oh, yeah, comic books, but I appreciated that the kids here, like, they were into comic books when it was really uncool to be into comic books. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I liked that, and they had comics. The little comic books, actual comic books. Mm-hmm. Another one I had, being into wrestling, as I mentioned, but I forgot that I feel like this was in a lot of movies and people would say it a lot growing up, is like saying busted. Oh, busted. They said that in this. I'm like, oh yeah, busted. That was such a fun thing.
What else you got?
There was a lot of Gold's Gym memorabilia, like the hat, the shirt. Not that it's a member berry, but it was kind of funny.
How are you not calling out the Dexter's Lab t-shirt that Miles was
wearing? I did see
in the
that.
Lab. Yeah.
I did see the Dexter's Lab t-shirt. I'm trying to think what other things, because I saw like a Spider-Man figurine that I'm pretty sure I had, but I don't know. Yeah, the Dexter's Lab was one. What did you got? Aside
Goofy's
from Goofy's
in the background of this movie a couple times.
What?
Goofy, the dog.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a funny detail. Yeah, all the other member berries I have are just kind of pertaining to this movie. I wrote down Patrick Renna, but we've talked about him. I really fucking loved that song and like singing it on the playground whenever my friends and I were like doing like an adventure thing. And getting it now, like from the composer 20 years later, is just so fucking cool. And I can't believe that happened to me. I told the Amazon gift card story. And then another story with this DVD. This DVD was obviously like very limited print. I doubt they printed more than like 100,000 or a million copies or whatever. But something that I thought was really funny was the DVD when it came in, the disc said it was rated R. And it was so clearly like some like intern or designer did it, but just copied and pasted a format from another disc that the studio had.
That's so funny.
And no one QA'd it because it was like, yeah, Punks is like one of our least like distributed DVDs this year based on our projection, so we don't give a fuck if there's like an accidental error on the disc itself. And so I felt really bad about it because I was a, like a very nervous kid, so I took a permanent marker and I crossed out the RA.
Oh my god, DVD. That's how you know you went to Catholic school. Can't watch a rated R movie.
That's all I really had there from this movie. Trevor, who would you really want to be your best friend?
Probably Patrick Renna's character.
Yeah. I think now I think
he's
would
the
say
funniest.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was probably Drew though, as a kid, right?
Exactly.
Cause he's the cause he's the protagonist, but also the one that's the least interesting.
Kinda. Yeah. But also, did you recognize him from another movie we talked about on the Old Kids movies? I should have mentioned him in Member Berries.
No.
But Tim Redwine was like the frenemy rival guy of Cody in the 13th year on the swim team.
Huh.
Remember him at all?
No.
He was the one who like spotted that he had it's the
kind of
fins.
A forgettable movie.
Yeah. It's a good movie. It's a fun movie.
Sure.
Do you have any thoughts on making this in 24 or no?
The thing is, this movie relies on being bullied, being into comic books when it's not cool, and also having this crazy plot. I think, to me, this movie just relies on finding a suit with four of your friends and doing something cool. They kind of already do this. It's called Power Rangers. That's a better version of this. That's a better story, is finding a suit that powers you up and going on an adventure because of it. In that case, they kind of all get suited up and all powered up. But that's just a better example of something like this. And it's not a overused premise, but it is a used premise, and that's certainly one of them.
I don't even think you need to go to the superpowered or the augmented or anything like that as part of this movie. I just think that there is a severe shortage of kids doing cool things movies these days. And yeah, I don't go to the theater and watch a lot of movies aimed for children anymore, but when I do, they're fun. Like, I thought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem was fun, and that's not exactly kids doing cool things, but it's in the spirit
it's
enough that I'm
doing
like
cool things,
right? And this is 13-year-olds, so like I'm fine. Like, show me more 9 to 16-year-old kids, and like if they're 16, don't make them look 20, like doing cool things, and I'd probably like that. And so you can make a heist movie with this. Like, we're gonna talk about Catch That Kid this year for its 20th anniversary. I have no idea how well it holds up, but I hope really well, because that's like kids doing cool things. Spy Kids I thought held up really well. Like, there's a market for kids using cool gadgets and outsmarting the adults and having an action heist adventure. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pitch what a prequel, requel, remake, whatever of Punks might be, but I think that you can take this idea of this ragtag group of outcasts who are kids and stealing from the bad corporate people and helping this kid's family. You can do something with that a little bit better, a lot better than you did with this movie.
I think there's not a shortage of these movies, because this inspired me to kind of go down the deep end of Tubi and Netflix and some other streamers. There are tons of these, AJ. They're still getting made. And it's
really?
Because they're so... Yes, all these movies are still getting made. Like, kids doing cool things. You just have to find them because they're straight to streaming, and they're not targeted towards you, because they were never targeted towards people our age. They're targeted to younger kids and stuff. So yeah, these movies are still here. They're still getting made. They're just not really for us anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'm obviously not seeing ads for them. I'm not seeing them in my recommended or anything like that. And if they're of this production quality, am I going to watch and enjoy them? Probably not. But I'm saying you can still make a good version of a kids doing cool things movie. And I hope that someday we see something like that.
Yeah. Well, like a bigger budget blockbuster kind of movie.
Correct. That still captures that spirit. That would make me happy.
Fair.
All right. I don't have a funny, unique final verdict question, so I will just say, Trevor, are you going to recommend Punks? And if you are, to whom would you recommend it?
No, I will not recommend Punks for really anybody, because I think there's better alternatives, which I'll recommend one. But before I do, I do want to say that, again, I don't think this movie is awful. I don't think this movie is, like, offensive or anything, because I think this movie had a place at the time. Obviously, at the time, you could make these kinds of movies, and they were a lot of fun for people like me, people like you, that did like these types of films. With that being said, like, yeah, sure, I get this. If this was a back then, I probably would recommend this. But no, instead, I'm going to recommend another movie about finding a suit that powers you up and does something. And it's The Rocketeer. So if you haven't seen The Rocketeer, I highly recommend watching it, because it's a tremendous little movie. And yeah, I think it is for kids. It's for everybody. And adults would like it too, because it's really well made, really well cast, and very fun. Have you seen The Rocketeer?
Never seen it. I'll add it to the list. You said basically what I was going to say, and it pains me to do that, because I love this movie. This is one of the most important movies of my childhood. But, you know, being objective, I saw a lot of things in here that I didn't love. Some cringy scenes, some bad acting, some bad sound effects, some situations where the script writing forced character, like the whole scene with the let's just break up and then get back together for no reason thing. This movie does have a lot of flaws. I can't wholeheartedly say it's worth revisiting or watching for the first time, so I am going to pass on it. But, you know,
for sure,
this is the first movie I have ever liked on Letterboxd. I don't press the heart button on Letterboxxd, but I felt so bad about giving it a 2.5-star review that I had to press the like button, because I'm like, I still love this movie. And so I am going to give it a very niche recommend, which I sometimes do for movies like this and The Shrunken City. Like, if you're 10 and under, you're going to fucking love this movie. I think this movie's going to, maybe not by today's production standards, but I'm still going to stump and say that you should watch this movie if you're 10 and under, or if you have kids who are 10 and under, give it a shot. But other than that, if you're looking for something of this caliber of kids doing cool things from this time frame that holds up a little bit more nicely, I am going to actually go out on a limb and recommend Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain. I know, Trevor, that you didn't love that movie, and it's got a bunch of problems of its own, but I think we both walked away from that movie being like, holy shit, this actually has a bunch of really, like, surprisingly good parts of it. And I know that they shone a lot more for me than they did for you. I think that Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain, for better or worse, is Sean McNamara's best movie. I haven't seen even Steven's movie in a very long time, but that's where my recommend is going to go instead. But if you're 10 and under, go ahead and give Punks a watch. I definitely think it did a lot for me as a kid, and I hope that it will do the same for you or for any of your kids who are 10 and under.
Brilliant. Well done.
Why, thank you, Trevor. And speaking of thank yous, we want to give thank yous to all of our upper-level patrons. So to Emil, Ben Franke, Ray Munoz, Trevor Sprouse, and Steven Schinder, thank you for being patrons of the Old Kids Movies. If you want to be a patron of the Old Kids Movies, and if you want to get shout-outs in all of these episodes and get bonus episodes every month and get early episode releases when we get around to it, head on over to our Patreon. The links are in the description of the episode, and you'd be doing us a great favor by supporting us, and we would appreciate that very, very much. Trevor, what do we got for the next episode? Your pick, sir.
I wanted to find a good time to do this, but it was released in Christmas, but it's slowly become one of my favorite, or not my favorite movies, but I think it's I don't know. It's becoming just a perfect movie to me. I think it's a perfect movie. It's not Star Trek. It's not Star Wars, but it's kind of a love letter to Star Trek. And if you are a Trekkie, you probably consider this a Star Trek movie as well.
Another 25th anniversary. I've never, ever seen this movie. I have no idea what I'm getting into. But
oh, wow,
I do,
you're in,
like,
for a treat.
I do like, I'm looking at this cast, and like him, like her, like him, he's okay. Love him. Yeah.
I mean, just read the premise. Doesn't that sound like a fun little idea? And if you think of it kind of like you're watching William Shatner, he's basically kind of playing William Shatner. It's fantastic.
fascinating. And I'm sure we'll talk about our Star Trek experience for you or lack thereof for me during this episode me. As well. Oh, okay. I thought you were a Trekkie for a bit.
No, I'm not. I've seen some of it and I enjoy it, but I don't really like it that much.
Well, I'm looking forward to giving this a watch, and we will have our thoughts on this movie in 2 weeks. Until then, you can follow us on Instagram at @TheOldKidsMovies. You can follow us on Twitter at @OldKidsMovies. We're on Letterboxd, so you can follow us there to see what we're watching, and we'll probably be talking about this movie on Letterboxd that we're reviewing in 2 weeks. You can also leave a review, comment, rate, all that stuff on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That does help the show. So if you're enjoying The Old Kids Movies and you don't want to become a patron or anything like that, this is also a great way to help the show. So we would appreciate you doing that. I think that's it for this week. We will see you in 2 weeks for a brand new episode of The Old Kids Movies. Thanks for listening.